worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried by WRMI, worldwide shortwave radio, 99.55 kilohertz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue with the revelations that I've been bringing you this week. Make sure that you are tape recording this broadcast, excuse me, or that you have a thick pad of paper, a pen, or two pens, so that you don't run out of ink, and take extensive notes. If you're unable to keep up, or if you are unable to tape record this broadcast, you may order studio quality stereo tapes of the Hour of the Time from the Harvest Trust. Make your check or money order payable to the Harvest Trust, and you may just state the date and the subject of the tape, and send it to the Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, Arizona 85925. Now, I remember what the one-hour tapes were when we were doing one-hour broadcasts, but since I don't really handle that, I don't know what the price of the two-hour tapes are, and I'll try to find that out sometime during this broadcast and let you know. But anyway, that's the basic information. If you'd just like to order a tape list so that you can make a choice, send $1 in a self-addressed stamped number 10 size envelope to the Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, Arizona 85925. That's the Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, Arizona 85925.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these gangsters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on Earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms.
Well, folks, I have that information for you now. Please write this down. Tapes of the two-hour broadcast of the Hour of the Time are $15 for non-members and $12 for CADGI or Intelligence Service members. These are studio quality stereo tapes, 2 hours each episode of the Hour of the Time. $15 for non-members, $12 for members of CADGI or the Intelligence Service. Make your check or money order payable to The Harvest Trust and send it to The Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's The Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. If you'd just like to have a packet of information, send $1 in a self-addressed stamp to number 10 size envelope to The Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 1970, Eager, Arizona, 85925.
You to be a slave from birth to grave. The banks do own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashes make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at
full face value.
Then charge you interest. You get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold.
You get the shaft.
Many people write, ladies and gentlemen, and ask, what did Hitler have to do with the New World Order if it's going to be socialist? Well, you see, you have been scammed for many years to believe that Hitler's right wing. The scale measures two extremes. On the left is total and complete control of everything and everyone owned by the state. And on the exact opposite end of the scale is the total absence of any control by anyone or anything. And that's called anarchy. In the middle somewhere, you have what is known as a constitutional republic. Hitler was a socialist, and that's what they don't want you to know, and that's why they've been brainwashing you for all these years to think that Nazis are right-wing. The truth is, people on the right-wing want less government, less control, and the farther you go, the less they want, until you reach total anarchy, which is just as bad as the opposite extreme, which is total and complete ownership and control of everything and everybody in the world under communism. Socialism is just a little above communism and always slides down into communism ultimately, because that's the nature of the beast. Hitler was a socialist. Nazi literally means German National Socialist Workers' Party. I hope that you all learn to start thinking with your brains instead of your glutamus maximus, which is what most people have been thinking with for most of their lives. Hitler was never right-wing, couldn't possibly be right-wing in a million billion years. He was a socialist. He socialized everything in Germany. He made the German people dependent upon the government and upon him, Der Führer, the father. They say that anyone who believes in their country or is patriotic is a Nazi, because Hitler was a national socialist. Well, folks, Hitler began as a national socialist, which simply means socializing your country. But if you notice, Hitler wanted to rule the world, and he began conquering other countries just as fast as he could. He talked about the New World Order and the New Order. Hitler had behind him the same people who are bringing about the New World Order of today. If you look around and see how things are transacting, you'll see that these people are no different than Hitler and his lackeys and his SS stormtroopers. You see, if it had been Hitler at Waco, Texas, or Ruby Ridge, the outcome would have been exactly the same. only because of his total control and his disarmament of the German citizens, it would have happened much sooner. They could not have pulled that off here, even though they ultimately did exactly what Americans have despised in this country and have traditionally believed could only happen in places like the Soviet Union, or Nazi Germany, or Castro's Cuba, or in third world countries where heads can roll at the flick of a finger. But it happened here, and I actually heard so-called Christians. They're no more Christians, ladies and gentlemen, than the cow in the pasture across the road over here. These so-called Christians said, oh, they were just a bunch of crazy fundamentalists, and they deserved exactly what they got. Can you imagine that? From a country whose founders came over here to escape from religious prosecution and found a nation which allowed people to practice whatever religion they wished. You see how far we've gone already? A lot farther than most people care to think or believe, I can assure you. We are almost finished as a free people. This is from document number 55, October 24th, 1950, United Nations. It is an address by President Truman to the General Assembly of the United Nations. Extract, October 24th, 1950, on cooperative disarmament. And I'm going to excerpt paragraphs out of his speech, and I quote, this is directly out of the mouth of President Harry Truman, I quote, disarmament is the course which the United States would prefer to take. It is the course which most nations would like to adopt. It is the course which the United Nations, from its earliest beginnings, has been seeking to follow. First, the plan must include all kinds of weapons. Outlawing any particular kind of weapon is not enough. The conflict in Korea bears tragic witness to the fact that aggression, whatever the weapons used, brings frightful destruction. Second, the plan must be based on unanimous agreement. A majority of nations is not enough. No plan of disarmament can work unless it includes every nation having substantial armed forces. One-sided disarmament is a sure invitation to aggression. Third, the plan must be foolproof. If real disarmament were achieved, the nations of the world acting through the United Nations could join in a greatly enlarged program of mutual aid. As the cost of maintaining armaments decreased, every nation could greatly increase its contributions to advancing human welfare. All of us could then pool even greater resources to support the United Nations in its war against want. End quote. Harry Truman, ladies and gentlemen, was a 33rd degree Freemason of the southern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite. In September of 1950, this article appeared in The New Age. The New Age is the magazine of the House of the Temple of the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And I remind you again, Harry Truman was a 33rd degree Freemason of the Scottish Rite. Harry Truman created the United Nations. Harry Truman put us on the track to world government. Harry Truman knew what he was doing. Harry Truman did it on purpose. Listen to this. And listen to the deception that's being foisted upon the world, especially what are known as minorities. Quote, God's plan is dedicated to the unification of all races, religions, and creeds. This plan, dedicated to the new order of things, is to make all things new. A new nation, a new race, a new civilization, and a new religion, a non-sectarian religion that has already been recognized and called the religion of the great light, end quote. This is right out. I'm quoting directly from the magazine, which was then called The New Age. It is the magazine of the House of the Temple of the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, and what they propose is simply treason. At the highest level of all these fraternal organizations lies the body of the secret organization known as the Illuminati. The Illuminati created communism. They created international socialism. They are working for one world government. Here it is in their own words. Let me read it to you again. Quote, God's plan is dedicated to the unification of all races, religions, and creeds. This plan, dedicated to the new order of things, is to make all things new. A new nation. They're not talking about the United States, folks. They're not talking about going out and finding some land and making a new country. They're talking about a new nation. The world united under one world government. Let me make sure you understand this. Quote, God's plan is dedicated to the unification of all races, religions, and creeds. This plan, dedicated to the new order of things, is to make all things new. A new nation, a new race, a new civilization, and a new religion. A non-sectarian religion that has already been recognized and called the religion of the great light. End quote. What is this religion of the great light? See, I don't even like to say it. My tongue doesn't like it. What is this religion of the great light? Well, I've spent countless hours over the last 4.5 years teaching you exactly what it is. It is the Luciferian philosophy, ladies and gentlemen. It's exactly what they believe. Is that man was held prisoner in the Garden of Eden by an unjust, vindictive God. And man was set free by Lucifer through his agent Satan when he seduced Eve into eating of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and told Eve that God lied to you. God lied to you, Eve, and you must entice Adam to also eat of this fruit, for God doesn't want you to realize exactly who you are. You see, he says if you eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, ye will surely die. And I tell you, you will not die, but you will become as gods. That's Satan talking. And anyone in any church or in any religion who believes that, believes in Satan's church and their God is Lucifer. Lucifer is the angel of light that was cast out of heaven because he wanted to sit on the throne above God. Remember that? These people who believe this, these Illuminists, believe that through the gift of intellect, which they received from Lucifer, they themselves will become gods or as gods. When they talk about God's plan, they're not talking about the God of the Bible, I can assure you. They're talking about their God, Lucifer. Albert Pike made that clear in the Masonic tome entitled Morals and Dogma, that for most of the years of the last century was given out to each new member of each lodge after their first initiation as entered apprentice. It's funny, so many people have read that book and don't even understand what it says when it is clear in plain English. But let me continue from this article from The New Age, the magazine of the House of the Temple of the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. Quote, looking back into history, we can easily see that the guiding hand of Providence has chosen the Nordic people to bring in and unfold the new world. Excuse me, let me back up. Let me read it again to make sure that I'm quoting absolutely correctly. Quote, looking back into history, we can easily see that the guiding hand of Providence has chosen the Nordic people to bring in and unfold the new order of the world. Records clearly show that 95% of the colonists were Nordics, Anglo-Saxons. Providence has chosen the Nordics because the Nordics have prepared themselves and have chosen God. The Nordics are God's chosen people, always looking for more light on the mission of life. Just as Providence has chosen the Jewish race, the children of Israel, to bring into the world righteousness by carrying the Ten Commandments, which emphasize, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, so also Providence has chosen the Nordic race to unfold the new age of the world, a novus ordo seclorum. One of the first of the Nordics to reach the New World was the Viking, Leif Erikson. He sailed from Norway to bring to his people in Ireland a new message. The message of the Christian people is Ireland's new message, the message of the Christian God. But Providence moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. And so Leif the Lucky was sent by Providence to the New World. From the abundance of grapes found there, Leif Erikson called the place Vinland. It is easy to sense that Leif Erikson was sent by the guiding hand of Providence to bring the Norse spirit of the All-Father to the shores of the New World. The Nordics are the highest branch of the fifth Aryan civilization. The Latins are of the fourth Aryan civilization. And the American race will be the sixth Aryan civilization. This new and great civilization is like an American beauty rosebud, ready to open and send its wonderful fragrance to all the world. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, Thomas Paine, and many others of the founders of the new nation in the New World were Nordics. Thomas Paine, as spark plug of the American Revolution, loved God but hated sectarianism. In These Are the Times, he wrote, quote, "We have it in our power to begin the world all over again. A situation similar to the present hath not happened since the days of Noah till now. The birthday of a new world is at hand." End quote. As stated before, God's plan in America is a non-sectarian plan. Our Constitution is non-sectarian. Our great American public schools, God's chosen schools, are non-sectarian. The great spirit behind this great nation is non-sectarian. Our great American public schools have never taken away from any child the freedom of will, freedom of spirit, or freedom of mind. That is the divine reason that great God, our King, has chosen the great American public schools to pave the way for the new race, the new religion, and the new civilization that is taking place in America. Any mother, father, or guardian who is responsible for the taking away of freedom of mind, freedom of will, or freedom of spirit is the lowest criminal on earth, because they take away from that child the God-given right to become a part of God's great plan in America for the dawn of the new age of the world. End quote. Now, if you were paying attention, folks, you would have recognized that most of this is a lie. Most of it is not true, either historically or religiously. And if they are Christians, as they claim to be when challenged about their religion, why do they have to have a new religion? And according to their own words here, they are not talking about the God of the Bible or the Christian religion or Jesus Christ or any other religion that may be found upon this earth. For they are talking about a non-sectarian humanist religion. The God that they are talking about is Lucifer. When they refer to Lucifer, ladies and gentlemen, they're referring to the story that I told you about the Garden of Eden as a metaphor. You see, they don't really believe in any God or any Lucifer at all. These are all symbolic. And Lucifer is symbolic of the intellect of man. Jehovah, or the God of the Bible, and Jesus Christ are synonymous to these people with the darkness of the medieval times, when anyone who challenged the church was burned at the stake. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, they don't believe in God or religion at all, of any kind, and they certainly don't believe in the freedom of religion or freedom of anything. For as they state in the article here, exactly as I quoted it to you, they're going to force a new nation upon you. They're not going to tell you the truth about what they're doing. They're going to lie to you and manipulate you into it until it's too late, until you reach the point where you couldn't back out if you wanted to. And that point will be reached after they take the weapons from the hands of the American people. See, here's what they're going to do. They're going to force you to accept a new nation. The new nation is one world government. They're going to force you to create a new race a new race. Now, just exactly how they're going to do that, I don't know. But they're not talking about the current situation where there's blacks and whites and Hispanics and Native Americans and Orientals and all of the other races and subsets of the races that I have mentioned. A new civilization. They're not talking about American tradition. They're not talking about a constitution with a Bill of Rights. They're not talking about any of these things. And a new religion, a non-sectarian religion that has already been recognized and called the religion of the Great Light, and I've exposed that to you over many years, as being secular humanism. You had better wake up and smell the roses, ladies and gentlemen. You see, you've been looking around to find out, what's wrong with this country? How can these things be happening? Who is the enemy? And for a long time, you thought it was the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was created by these people. The whole gist of the Soviet Union communism pitted against the capitalism of the West is to result in a clash that produces a synthesis which is socialism, which will then slide back into communism. Don't you understand how these things work? That's exactly where we're going. That's exactly what this is all about, ladies and gentlemen. And that's exactly what they said in their article. No conspiracy. No plan for a new world order. I just read it to you in their own words. No movement toward a one world religion, one world government. I just read it to you in their own words. It was printed, wasn't hidden from anybody, in the September 1950 issue of the magazine called The New Age. The mouthpiece, ladies and gentlemen, if you will. The mouthpiece of the House of the Temple of the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. Look it up yourself. In the United States Code annotated, Constitution of the United States annotated, Amendments 1 to 3, annotations from federal and state courts. Purpose in interpreting and implying this amendment. Purpose of amendment to assure continuation and render possible the effectiveness of the militia must be considered. U.S. versus Miller, Arkansas, 1939, 59. Purpose of this amendment, guaranteeing the right of the people to keep and bear arms, was to preserve the effectiveness and assure the continuation of the state militia. U.S. versus Oaks, CA, Kansas, 1977, 564, F. 2nd, 384. Cert, excuse me, 98, State Court, 1493, 435, U.S. Supreme Court, 926, 55, L. Ed. 2nd, 521. Look it up for yourself. Quote, the amendment was designed to foster a well-regulated militia as necessary to the security of a free state. Aces versus U.S. CCA, Puerto Rico, 1942, 131, F. 2nd, 916, Cert. 63, State Court, 1431, 319, U.S. Supreme Court, 770, 87, L. Ed. 1718, rehearing denied, 65, State Court, 1010, 324, United States Supreme Court, 889, 89, L. Ed. 1437. The hour of the time is the only place that you get the truth, ladies and gentlemen. It's the only place that you ever learn what's really happening, who's bringing it about, what you should do, and we even tell you where we got it, and we name names unabashedly. For the last 4.5 years, I've been naming names, exposing these people, and there's nothing that they can do about it except stew and steam and wonder how they're going to shut me up. Next time you see a gun control nut, flash this stuff in their face. All of this can be downloaded from the text files on my webpage on the internet, ladies and gentlemen. All of it. Let me give you the address of my webpage on the internet. All of this is there, and more. and it's rolled over and changed on a constant basis. Transcripts of the hour of the time. Here's the address. http://www.telepath.com/believer. That's http://www.telepath.com/believer. Go to the section on transcripts and download all you want. http://www.telepath.com/believer. It's all there and more. And there's links to other pages where you can continue and broaden your research ability and thus your knowledge. I couldn't believe that supposedly intelligent militia leaders went to the Donahue show without the quotes and the backing in the law that they needed to beat that socialist communist puke at his own game. The man who flashed the second article, an amendment to the world, and left out the phrase, quote, the right of the people, end quote, on the television screen intentionally. Donahue is a communist, has been all his life. He's also a puke-faced liar. And those militia leaders, those so-called militia leaders, went there without any knowledge or substance or documentation of the legitimacy of the militia and the law. And while they didn't do too bad, they didn't do the job that they should have and could have done. You see, they could have cooked Donahue in his own juice. It would have been very easy. A person's right to bear arms, as guaranteed by the second article in amendment, does not extend to pistols or other readily concealable weapons. Rather, that guarantee protects only the right to be armed with weapons suitable for use by militia in warfare and by the general defense of the community. That is what the courts are now ruling in an attempt to get the arms from the hands of the American people. Now they are trying to convince you that the militia consists only of the National Guard, and if you're not in the National Guard, you're not a part of the militia. The law says otherwise. The law says any person, any man in most instances, in some states, says person. Any man between the ages of 17 and 45 is a member of the militia, whether they know it, whether they want to be, whether anybody told them or not. And they have the right to keep and bear arms always. A further statute in the United States Code extends that age limit to age 65 for all honorably discharged veterans or retirees from any branch of the military service of the United States of America or of any state. The courts are ruling now, based upon the fact that they are now telling you that the National Guard is the militia, going against the law, going against all of the history and traditions and past rulings of the courts and the Supreme Court of the United States of America. And the courts are now ruling unlawfully that only the militia, which is the National Guard, may keep and bear arms. I'm telling you now that the militia is as it has always been and is, according to the law, all citizens of the United States of America, specifically stated in the law to be between the ages of 17 and 45, or extended to the age 65 in the case of honorably discharged or retired members of any branch of military service in this country. Here's what the courts say. Here's what the courts say. Guida versus Deere, 1975, 375 New York, S. 2nd, 826, 84, Miss, spelled M-I-S-C, period, 2nd, 110, modified on other grounds, 387, New York, S. 2nd, 720, 54, A.D. 2nd, 86, quote, The word arms, in the connection we find it in the Constitution of the United States, refers to the arms of a militiaman, or soldier, and the word is used in its military sense. The arms of the infantry soldier are the musket and bayonet of cavalry and dragoons, the saber, holster, pistols, and carbine of the artillery, the field piece, siege gun, and mortar with sidearms, end quote. English, versus State, 1872, 35, Texas, 476, quote, this amendment guarantees a collective rather than an individual right, end quote. U.S. versus Warren, C.A., Ohio, 1976, 530, F., 2nd, 103, cert denied, 96, State Court, 3168, 426, United States Supreme Court, 948, 49, L. Ed., 2nd, 1185, quote, constitutional right to keep and bear arms applies only to the right of the state to maintain militia and not to individuals' right to bear arms, end quote. Stevens versus U.S., C.A., Kentucky, 1971, 440, F. 2nd, 144, see also application of Cassidy, 1944, 51, New York, S. 2nd, 202, 268, Appellate Division, 282. Reargument denied, 63, New York, S. 2nd, 840, 270, Appellate Division, 1046. Affirmed, 73, N.E. 2nd, 541, 296, New York, 926. Com versus Davis, 1976, 343, N.E. 2nd, 847, 369, Massachusetts, 886. Fotos versus City of Toledo, 1969, 250, N.E. 2nd, 916, 19, Ohio, Miscellaneous, 147. Harris versus State, 1967, 432, Page, or P. 2nd, 2983, Nevada, 404. Quote, this amendment does not imply any general constitutional right for individuals to bear arms and form private armies. Vietnamese Fishermen's Association versus Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, D.C., Texas, 1982, 543F, Supplement 198. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand what I'm telling you. The courts are now telling you that you don't have a right to keep a weapon to hunt. You don't have a right to keep a weapon to protect your house. You only have a right guaranteed by the second article in amendment to keep a right for the protection of the state and of the Constitution, the right to keep and bear arms. You see, they say the right to keep and bear arms is for the militia. I've been telling you this over and over and over again. You must join a militia. You must form a militia, or they're going to use your absence of appearing on the rolls of a militia to take away your right to keep and bear arms. You must. The militia cannot be restricted on any arms, as you've already heard. The courts have ruled that if you're an artillery militia, you're entitled to have artillery. I just read it to you. Supreme Court decision, ladies and gentlemen. You may have a militia of artillery. You may have a militia of armor. You have may have a militia of cavalry. If you think horses are going to cut the mustard, and you can have an infantry militia. But you must have a militia, or your right to keep and bear arms is in dire jeopardy. The truth is the courts are ruling unconstitutionally and unlawfully on these subjects. For the second article in amendment is clear, and the active clause is, and I quote, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. A militia being necessary to the security of a free state is a descriptive clause. And in the writings of the founding fathers, including George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, all of them, they made it very clear that the purpose of a militia was to provide a citizen's army to prevent tyranny by the government. The word arms, in the connection we find it in the Constitution of the United States, refers to the arms of a militiaman or soldier, and the word is used in its military sense as interpreted by the courts. The arms of the infantry soldier are the musket and bayonet of cavalry and dragoons, the saber, holster, pistols, and carbine of the artillery, the field piece, siege gun, and mortar with sidearms. You must be a legal and lawful militia. If you are not, They're going to try to take your guns away based upon the fact that you're not. Quote, this amendment does not imply any general constitutional right for individuals to bear arms and form private armies, end quote. Now they're equating militias with private armies. The history of this country and the truth about militias is that they are never and have never been private armies and never functioned as such. And there are many, many, many more cases. Quote, self-defense is not substantive right conferred directly by this amendment, and thus no constitutional right of federal employee was violated by her discharge upon basis of assault incident in which employee claimed to have acted in self-defense, end quote. They're telling you now, the courts are ruling now, ladies and gentlemen, this is a ruling from 1982, that you don't have the right to defend yourself with a firearm if somebody comes to kill you. That was Fields versus Harris, CA, Missouri, 1982, 675 F, 2nd, 219. Certiorari denied, 103, S. Court, 153, 459, U.S. Supreme Court, 869, 74, L. Ed. 2nd, 128. Quote, this amendment does not contemplate within its express limitation on powers of the national government granting defendant right to carry sworn in his belt for the purposes stated, namely that he might need them and that he wanted to be prepared, end quote. In other words, that's saying that this man couldn't even carry a sword for self-defense. Masters versus State, Texas, App, 3rd District, 1983, 653, SW, 2nd, 1944, App, 685, SW, 2nd, 654, certiorari denied, 106, S. Court 155 88 L.N. 2nd 128. Quote, applicability to state or federal government. Supreme Court has stated that the Second Amendment declares that it shall not be infringed, but this means no more than that it shall not be infringed by Congress. This is one of the amendments that has no other effect than to restrict the powers of the national government. Therefore, the right to keep and bear arms under this amendment is not a fundamental right which state cannot regulate. Culici versus Village of Morton Grove, CA, Illinois, 1982, 695, F. 2nd, 261, certiorari denied, 104, S. Court, 194, 464, U.S. Supreme Court, 863, 78, L. Ed. 2nd, 170. Are you beginning to get the message? I've been trying to teach you, and I look out and I get letters, and I see what you're doing, and you send me your militia material, and I see that you're nothing but a bunch of children playing games, and you'd better straighten it up real quick. Real quick.
My mind a little, I come across the reason why you're gone. Maybe if I search a little while, and if I try to reconcile a little, then maybe I will know for how long. Thank you.
confusion, but I don't know why. But I've made my plans already. I've been struggling out all my life. The world is out there, they come and go. I keep on my friends, here they come.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's two books that you must obtain and read. Many years ago, a high-ranking member of the Soviet KGB defected to the United States of America. His name is Anatoly Golitsyn, spelled A-N-A-T-O-L-I-Y, and his last name is Golitsyn. G-O-L-I-T-S-Y-N. The first book he published was New Lies for Old. The title is New Lies for Old. Find it. Read it. And then he published another book called The Perestroika Deception. The Perestroika Deception by Anatoly Golitsyn. Get both of these books and read them. It was hard for the people in the intelligence community to believe that he was telling the truth when he first defected and outlined the coming fall of the Soviet Union, the bringing down of the Berlin Wall, the disarmament of the West, and the winning of the Cold War by the Soviet Union through the deception of perestroika. He made, ladies and gentlemen, approximately 140 predictions. 130 of them have been 100% correct. He was right. And what I'm telling you is right. And you had better wake up and begin to do something about it, or you're going to find that the Soviet Union did not fall. It just took over the whole world. Now, as you look over there, you think, this guy's full of it. This guy's full of crap. Until you really start doing some studying. All of these so-called democratic leaders of what used to be communist countries are communists. They're still in complete and full control. There is no democracy being established anywhere over there. At all. There is no disarmament taking place. It is a deception on a grand scale. And if you keep listening to this broadcast, you will get all the documentation and references that you need to prove it to yourself. But you can never do that unless you take the information that I give you and look it up. Remember, listen to everyone, read everything, believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. That includes me. That includes Bill Clinton. That includes your mother. Includes the mayor of your city, can include your congressman, and especially your congressman. Any politician is a liar from the word go. You all should know that by now. So, it doesn't do any good for me to give you all of this information if you are not going to act upon it. You see, you must act upon it. You must take this information and look it up for yourself. Otherwise, I'm wasting my time. And you're never going to learn what the truth is or is not. And that's the truth. Quote, guarantee of right to keep and bear arms under this amendment protects not an individual right, but a collective right in the people as a group to serve as militia, and imposes no limitation on the state's legislature's power to prohibit individuals from carrying deadly weapons where the prohibition will not interfere with the preservation of efficiency of the militia. End quote. Application of Atkinson, Minnesota, 1980-291, NW 2nd, 396. Quote, right to bear arms under state constitution or state decisional law is not an absolute right. Right may be circumscribed by conditions under which it is sought to be asserted. End quote. U.S. versus Romero, CA, New Mexico, 1973, 484, F. 2nd, 1324. See also State versus Rupp, Iowa, 1979, 282, N.W. 2nd, 125, State versus Dawson, 1968, 159, S.E. 2nd, 1, 272, North Carolina, 535, Bristow versus State, Alabama, CR, Appeals, 1982, 418, S.O. 2nd, 927. Quote, this amendment places no limitation on power of state legislators to enact gun control legislation, end quote. People versus Morrell, 1984, 475, NY, S. 2nd, 684, or excuse me, 648, 101, AD, 2nd, 927. Quote, there is no absolute constitutional right of an individual to possess a firearm, end quote. Thompson versus Duretta, D.C., Utah, 1982, 549, F. Supp, 297, appeal dismissed, 709, F. 2nd, 1343. See also State versus Winkleman, 1981, 442, N.E., 2nd, 811, 2nd, Ohio, appeal 3rd, 465, 2, OBR, 561. Quote, municipal ordinance requiring that persons seeking to possess handgun first obtain identification card in order to demonstrate their entitlement to possess such weapon did not violate this amendment since it did not infringe upon maintenance of well-regulated militia right which this amendment seeks to protect. Purpose furthered by ordinance of safeguarding public as much as possible from dangers of illegal weapons is proper subject for reasonable regulation under police power. End quote. Mosier versus City of Dayton, 1976, 358, N.E. 2nd, 540, 20.03rd, 412, 48, Ohio State 2nd, 243. I bet you're paying attention to me now, aren't you? You see, you always thought that this was inviolable. Well, it is inviolable. Under the intent of the Founding Fathers and all of their writings and the history and tradition of this country. But it's only inviolable if there is a standing militia to say, this is unconstitutional what you are doing and you cannot take our guns away from us. You see, if these treasonous judges, these socialists sitting on the bench of state and federal courts, these Freemasons, whose goal is one world totalitarian socialist government, make these unconstitutional rulings and you let them get by with it, then you've lost your right. The first tenet in the common law is he who does not defend his right has no rights. Quote, city ordinance prohibiting registration of any handgun after April 10, 1982, unless it was validly registered to current owner in city before April 10th, does not infringe on constitutionally protected right, end quote. Scholar versus Byrne, D.C., Illinois, 1983, 556, F. Supp, 736, affirm, 727, F. 2nd, 633. Quote, even where this amendment is applicable, it does not constitute an absolute barrier to congressional regulation of firearms, end quote. And that's true in any area that's owned and controlled by the federal government, the federal zone. But in the states, it is not true. And that's what you don't know. Quote, regulation of dealers and firearms under Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act, 18 U.S.C.A., Section 921, et sec., does not infringe on rights under this amendment of people to keep and bear arms, absent a showing that licensing in any way destroys or impairs efficiency of a well-regulated militia, end quote. Well, you see, that's not true, ladies and gentlemen, because if you're a member of a militia, you must be able to keep and bear arms. That's what the amendment says, doesn't it? So if you're between the ages of 17 and 45, by law, you are a member of the militia. And so none of these laws apply to those people. And if you are honorably discharged or retired from the military services of your country, that age limit is extended until the age of 65. How about that? Are you waking up? Do I have your attention now? I better. Because if I don't have your attention by now, you're doomed. You might as well go get the chains and put them on your own ankles. Save somebody the trouble. This is the Voice of Freedom.
listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 9955 kilohertz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
Back to the Hour of the Time, ladies and gentlemen. I'm William Cooper, the man that President Clinton called in a White House memo the most dangerous radio host in America. Not because I want to or would hurt anyone, because I don't. Not because I run around carrying a rifle and sticking it up people's noses, because I don't. It's because I wield the sword of truth, the weapon that these socialists scum cannot fight, cannot defeat, because they are nothing but chronic liars. Almost everything that spews from their lips and out of their temples without windows and from their mystery religions and from the halls of government, which they have infiltrated and now control, is nothing but lie after lie after lie after lie after lie after lie after lie. Lies, lies, and more lies. That's what we're subjected to on a constant basis. From television, from movies, from the news, the communist news networks, Allied Broadcasting Communist, National Broadcasting Communist, Communist News Network, Communist Broadcasting System, all the rest of them. White House press conferences, liars. And you should all have realized that by now. You see, one basic truth can be used as a foundation for a mountain of lies. And if we dig down deep enough in the mountain of lies and bring out that truth, to set it on top of the mountain of lies, the entire mountain of lies will crumble under the weight of that one truth, and there is nothing more devastating to a structure of lies than the revelation of the truth upon which the structure of lies was built, because the shockwaves of the revelation of the truth reverberate and continue to reverberate throughout the earth for generations to follow, awakening even those people who had no desire to be awakened to the truth. Delamere Duverts said that, and I put it prominently in the front of my book, Behold a Pale Horse, which if you haven't read, you need to read. And I'll tell you how to get that another day. You are in danger, ladies and gentlemen, great danger. Great danger. You know, I have several more pages, many more pages, in fact, of quotes from court rulings that prove to you that they're going to take your guns. that all that you believe about your freedoms are threatened, challenged, endangered now. You see, they can't have a one-world totalitarian socialist government if Americans remain armed. If Americans keep their right to keep and bear arms, if we do not ever let our weapons go, they're finished. It's all over. They can't do it. Because there isn't an army on the face of this earth that can come to this continent, including the armies that are already on this continent, and oppose 240 million pissed off armed Americans. Cannot be done. You see, those backward, uneducated tribesmen, if in Afghanistan, defeated the entire military might of the Soviet Union. Men running around using World War II and pre-World War II rifles with CB radios for communication kicked the United States out of Somalia. Beat our butts. And I could go on and on and on. I could give you example after example where a small handful of men with ancient weapons have defeated the most modern armies on the face of this earth simply because they believed in what they were doing and were willing to die for that belief. No mercenary can ever defeat a people who are willing to die in defense of certain ideals and principles. It can't be done. For as soon as the mercenary observes casualties being inflicted, there isn't a paycheck big enough to make him stay. But people who believe in what they are doing and the principles and ideals for which they are fighting and are ready and willing to die, if required for those principles and ideals, cannot be defeated ever. For you can never stomp out a whole people. It cannot be done. Now you're going to have to sit down and determine what it is that you believe in. And are you willing to die for those principles and ideals if you are called upon to do so? And if you are not, the next time somebody calls upon your children to send them off to some God-forsaken spot on this earth to fight some battle, don't you dare pat them on the ass and send them off if you don't have the guts to stand and die here for the principles and ideals upon which this country was built. And don't use the excuse that they're fighting in defense of freedom or the Constitution and that they're patriots, because that is absolute bullshit and you all know it. If you're not willing to stand up here in defense of the principles and ideals upon which this country was founded and fight and die here for the Constitution and for the freedom of the American people and your children and your grandchildren, then don't you be sending somebody off to fight and die somewhere else for something that has nothing to do with any of those things. Don't you even consider it. And if you do, don't talk to me about patriotism or fighting for the Constitution or for your country, because it's a lie. It's a lie upon the face of it. And you then become a liar. And you know it. I was in Henry's barbershop not too long ago, and I was talking to Henry about what's going on in the world, and about what was happening to a group of men up in Montana called the Freemen. And a man came in and sat down, and he said, they ought to go in there and kill them all. I said, why do you say that? They're anti-American. I don't think so. The common law is American. Our whole legal system is based upon the common law. The common law is protected in the Constitution. I read that to you yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. Protected in the Constitution. One of the freemen has already been acquitted. Already been acquitted. I asked him what his definition of American was, and he sputtered and spluttered, and he couldn't tell me. You know what he told me? You know how he justified his comment? He said, I fought for my country. I know what I'm talking about. I said, when did you fight for your country? He said, Korean War. I'm a Korean War veteran. I said, I know that you fought for your country, and your intentions and your desire to fight for your country is admirable, and I admire you for that. But you were not fighting for your country, you were fighting for the United Nations. Had nothing to do with your country. No matter what happened in Korea, no matter who won or lost, had nothing to do with the United States of America, period. And the fact that you may have fought for your country in Korea, or at least you thought you were fighting for your country in Korea, has nothing to do with whether or not you know what being an American is. Then he said, well, you never fought for your country. I said, you're right, but I thought I was. I believed at the time that I was, but you're wrong in saying that I never fought. Makes you a bigot. You're making assumptions about me that you don't know anything about. I was a patrol boat captain on a river in Vietnam. And I fought nightly, believing that I was fighting for my country and for freedom and for the Constitution. Later I found out it was all crap, baloney. I wasn't fighting for any of those things. And the way it was set up, we were supposed to win from the beginning for the Viet Cong. You see, we weren't supposed to win at all. And all the rules and regulations that we had to play by guaranteed it. It was a foregone conclusion that South Vietnam was going to fall to the communists. In the meantime, a lot of other people were going to make a lot of money in the process. I said, where did you fight in Korea? And he spluttered and blustered, and come to find out, he never fought at all, wasn't in Korea. He was just in the military during that time period. And he got so angry, his face turned beet red, and I thought he was going to explode right there. In fact, I was a little bit worried that in his embarrassment, he might jump up and want to come to fisticuffs, for which I was prepared to do if it was necessary, but I was hoping that it wouldn't come to that. And after my haircut was finished, I got out of the chair and I walked over to him and I said, I'm really sorry if I made you angry. I didn't intend to. I was talking to Henry about the Freeman in Montana, and we were having a conversation which you interrupted. And I apologize if I have offended you in any way. Well, he wouldn't accept that. And he was still angry and still blustering when I left the barbershop. But that's just an example of the kind of mentality that permeates America. I'm a veteran, ladies and gentlemen, a Vietnam veteran. I really did fight. I have two medals. It doesn't make any difference what they are, with the V for Valor. I was called a hero. But those of us who fought know that there is no such thing. You do what you have to do to survive and cause the survival of those that you are with. And sometimes you're so scared and so pumped up with adrenaline that you don't even know what it is that you're doing. And that's the truth of the matter. In almost every city in this country, there are VFW halls and Foreign Legion halls. And I thought at one time that I could go in there and find people of like mind. And I went to a few meetings and went a couple of times during the day to have a beer and talk with the guys. And you know what I discovered, ladies and gentlemen? Let me tell you what I discovered about the VFW and the American Legion halls. It's not a place where people are interested in this information. are interested in stopping what's happening to this country. It's a place where grown men sit around, get drunk, and tell lies to each other. About how great they were in defending their country. And so I quit going, because it's not anything that I want to have anything to do with. That could change. If you're a member of one of those halls, you could cause that to change today, or tomorrow, or next week. And that's a fact. But you must get interested, and you must begin to do something now, or you are lost. You must have a militia. You must have a militia. You must belong to a militia. And that militia has to be full of men with a purpose who believe wholeheartedly in the principles and ideals upon which this country was founded, and they must be brave men who are willing to die for those principles and ideals should that opportunity present itself. Cowards need not apply. For I'm going to tell you, within a few short years, Americans are going to be called upon to fight for their freedoms, or put the chains upon their own ankles and march into enslavement. My whole purpose in writing my book, in publishing my newspaper, Veritas, in creating this broadcast, The Hour of the Time, and the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, was to awaken enough concerned Americans that through a political consensus of opinion, we could reverse this trend peacefully and restore constitutional republican government. And at one time, I had a great, tremendous faith in the American people that once they found out what was going on and began to check the documentation and prove to themselves that it was true, that we would be able to do that. Now I'm not so optimistic. In fact, I'm not optimistic in that vein whatsoever when I saw how easy it was for people on the side of the enemy like Ross Perot to divide the vote, to call a huge number of voters into a cul-de-sac and keep them spinning around chasing their tail. After I have watched Americans accept computer voting, where once they put their vote into that computer, it turns into an electron, can't be counted, and nobody has any idea where it went. While I watched many states do away with the written ballot and the written ballot backup. Now, in many areas, you vote by touching a computer screen and no paper trail exists whatsoever. You touch that screen, your vote turns into an electron and disappears forever, and nobody can ever check to see if your vote was registered where you thought it was going. I also learned that most people don't want to hear the truth, don't want to go and research it, don't want to find out if it's true, and certainly don't want to do anything about it because they are afraid. I have discovered that most people are cowards. And they believe that if they don't look at it, if they don't acknowledge it, it will just go away. It can't happen to me. It can't happen in America. This is America, boy. What are you talking about? Can't happen here. It's already happened here. It's been happening for many years. In fact, it's almost a done deal. This is from the Yearbook of the United Nations, 1978, Volume 32, Department of Public Information, United Nations, New York, on page 46, under Political and Security Questions, paragraph 109. Quote, implementation of these priorities should lead to general and complete disarmament under effective international control, which remains the ultimate goal of all efforts exerted in the field of disarmament. Now, folks, when they're talking about international control, they're not talking about you being disarmed under the control of our people here in this country. They're talking about international control of the disarmament of the American people and our armed forces. Total and complete disarmament. Quote, negotiations on general and complete disarmament shall be conducted concurrently with negotiations on partial measures of disarmament. With this purpose in mind, the Committee on Disarmament will undertake the elaboration of a comprehensive program of disarmament encompassing all measures thought to be advisable in order to ensure that the goal of general and complete disarmament under effective international control becomes a reality in a world in which international peace and security prevail and in which the new international economic order is strengthened and consolidated. Now, if you take a legal dictionary and look up the definition of economic order, it will tell you it is government. Quote, the comprehensive program should contain appropriate procedures for ensuring that the General Assembly is kept fully informed of the progress of the negotiations, including an appraisal of the situation, when appropriate, and in particular, a continuing review of the implementation of the program. Paragraph 110, quote, progress in disarmament should be accompanied by measures to strengthen institutions for maintaining peace and the settlement of international disputes by peaceful means. During and after the implementation of the program of general and complete disarmament, there should be taken, in accordance with the principles of the Charter of the United Nations, the necessary measures to maintain international peace and security, including the obligation of states to place at the disposal of the United Nations agreed manpower necessary for an international peacekeeping force to be equipped with agreed types of armaments. Arrangements for the use of this force should ensure that the United Nations can effectively deter or suppress any threat or use of arms in violation of the purposes and principles of the United Nations. End quote. Paragraph 111, quote, general and complete disarmament under strict and effective international control shall permit states to have at their disposal only those non-nuclear forces, armaments, facilities, and establishments as are agreed to be necessary to maintain internal order and protect the personal security of citizens and in order that states shall support and provide agreed manpower for a United Nations peace force, end quote. Under paragraph 115, quote, the General Assembly has been and should remain the main deliberative organ of the United Nations in the field of disarmament and should make every effort to facilitate the implementation of disarmament measures. An item entitled Review of the Implementation of the Recommendations and Decisions Adopted by the General Assembly at its 10th Special Session shall be included in the provisional agenda of the 33rd and subsequent sessions of the General Assembly. End quote. Paragraph 120, and I quote, the General Assembly is conscious of the work that has been done by the international negotiating body that has been meeting since 14 March 1962, as well as the considerable and urgent work that remains to be accomplished in the field of disarmament, end quote, and on, and on, and on, and on. Paragraph 126, quote, in adopting this final document, the states, members of the United Nations, solemnly reaffirm their determination to work for general and complete disarmament and to make further collective efforts aimed at strengthening peace and international security, eliminating the threat of war, particularly nuclear war, implementing practical measures aimed at halting and reversing the arms race, strengthening the procedures for the peaceful settlement of disputes, and reducing military expenditures and utilizing the resources thus released in a manner which will help to promote the well-being of all peoples and to improve the economic conditions of the developing countries, end quote. And on and on. It talks about the new phase in disarmament. And here we have on page 113, quote, Liberia submitted to the first committee in 1978 a draft resolution on the need for a new philosophy on disarmament to be formulated from the new ideas, theories, proposals, and strategies set forth at the General Assembly's 10th special and current sessions. Liberia envisioned the new philosophy as an organized departure from outmoded premises into a system for mobilizing world public opinion, end quote, which simply translated means you are receiving a barrage of propaganda to get you to consent to be disarmed as a part of the overall plan of world disarmament. In other words, propaganda. Quote, which could make possible a popular grasp of the nature of the disarmament problem and United Nations goals on disarmament. Introducing the text, Liberia suggested that all the new ideas and concepts on disarmament should be fused into a single principle of an integrated philosophy, perhaps as a new world disarmament order, its format perhaps as a doctrine or as a philosophical declaration. Did you know that on the grounds of the United Nations in New York City, there is a huge, huge statue of a pistol with the barrel tied in a knot? And it goes on, quote, final document of the 10th special session be formulated into a single comprehensive and coordinated system, into a new philosophy on disarmament, and a message that could effectively reach the minds of men in a mobilization of world public opinion in support of the United Nations goal for halting the arms race and eventually for complete and general disarmament centered on a new order of national and international security. On page 121. On June 30, 1978, at the 10th Special Session, the General Assembly decided to establish a disarmament commission composed of all member states of the United Nations. The commission was asked to report on organizational matters to the Assembly's regular 1978 session. End quote. What's wrong with this, folks? You say I'm against peace in the world? Not on your life. You say I'm against world government? No, not if it's done properly. Under a constitution that recognizes individual rights and secures those rights for the people? And if it's a constitutional Republican government, I would be in favor of it, would support it, would promote it, even. Am I for war? Not on your life. No, I hate and despise war. I fought in a war. I know what war is. War is not glamorous. There are no heroes. There is nothing good that I can say about war at all. Period. I am against the American citizen being disarmed because I have studied the history of the world, and all people who have ever been disarmed in the history of the world have been shortly thereafter enslaved. It is the truth. Mao Zedong, a very well-known communist revolutionary leader, a man who is an expert in guerrilla warfare and in controlling huge masses of people, said, quote, all power emanates from the barrel of a gun, end quote, and he was telling us the truth. I don't like his philosophy. I don't like him. I respect him. I admire what he accomplished, even though I do not admire what it did to people. But he told us the truth. And he was an expert. He knows what he's talking about. A people who do not have the means to defend themselves with the same weapons that anyone coming against them might use against them are slaves. A people without weapons are a people without power of any kind. You talk about political power? Baloney. Since when in the world has any people who have been disarmed had any political power? They are at the mercy of those who control the guns. That is the truth. That is the way it's always been. Didn't they promise the citizens of the Soviet Union a democracy? Didn't they tell them they had the right to vote? Doesn't the Soviet Constitution give them the right to keep and bear arms? Yet they never did. And when they voted, there was only one party and one candidate in each election. And yes, they had the right to vote. In fact, they had to vote. And they had to vote for that one candidate or they got shot. Same thing in communist China. You better get the message, folks. Stop listening to this bleeding, heart-blathering, feel-good nonsense that these stupid people are feeding you on a daily basis. You're eating pablum. You're eating pablum for lunch, and you don't even know it. You're eating it for breakfast, and you're eating it for supper, and you're eating it all the time in between, and you don't even understand that it's pablum. Dangerous pablum. Pablum that will choke you, that will poison you, that will kill you. Have you been kissed by a rose? Ladies and gentlemen, we've been lied to. We've been deceived. We've been manipulated. We've been scammed. Our nation has been stolen right out from under us. There are no protections for individual rights in the United Nations Charter or in any of the resolutions passed by the United Nations since its inception. If you take the United Nations Charter, ladies and gentlemen, if you take it and put it side by side with the old Soviet Constitution, the Constitution for the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, they are the same, almost word for word. The man most responsible for writing the United Nations Charter, ladies and gentlemen, was found to be a communist spy, Alger Hiss, and others. In fact, most of the people in the United Nations are on the, I should say, the United States delegation that was sent to San Francisco to organize and form the United Nations and write its charter, later turned out to be communist spies. Alger Hiss was one of them. He was tried, convicted, and placed where he belongs, in jail. Now that the socialists are in charge of Washington, D.C., you see all these articles in Newsweek and other places trying to say that he should be released from jail because he really wasn't a communist after all. Well, you will study the evidence and study the trial transcript, and you'll find out that there's no doubt whatsoever. But you see, he's a hero to these people. In the supreme law of the land, ladies and gentlemen, the United States Code annotated, Constitution of the United States annotated, Articles 2 through 7, annotations from federal and state courts. And listen carefully to what I'm telling you. For all of you who have not believed what I've been putting out as the message to this nation and to the world, you'd better listen, and I am a messenger. Once again, the United States Code annotated, Constitution of the United States annotated, Articles 2 through 7, annotations from federal and state courts. On page 576, paragraph 112, quote, United Nations Charter, a treaty ratified by the United States, is part of the supreme law of this land, end quote. Now, let me tell you that again, just in case you missed it. United States Code annotated, Constitution of the United States annotated, Articles 2 through 7, annotations from federal and state courts. On page 576, paragraph 112, quote, United Nations Charter, a treaty ratified by the United States, is part of the supreme law of this land, end quote. U.S. versus Steinberg, D.C., Illinois, 1976, 478 F, Sup 29. See also Balfour, Guthrie and Company, Limited versus U.S., D.C., Cal, 1950, 90 F, Sup 831. Quote, provision of United Nations Charter that the United Nations should promote universal respect for observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms for all without distinction as to race, sex, language, or religion, was not self-executing and therefore was not part of the supreme law of the United States, end quote. Do you understand what I'm saying? They're saying that the United Nations Charter and any resolution or anything that the United Nations pass is part of the supreme law of the United States of America. Supreme law of this land. This last paragraph I just read is talking about a specific charter that was passed, or I should say convention, that was passed by the United Nations on the observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms for all without distinction as race, sex, language, or religion, was not self-executing within the law and therefore was not part of the supreme law of the United States like the United Nations Charter and the other United Nations resolutions, which are self-executing. Do you understand this? I hope that you do. That was Camacho versus Rogers, D.C., New York, 1961, 199, F, Sup 155. Quote, listen to this. The United Nations Charter is a treaty within the purview of this clause, making treaties a part of the supreme law of the land and binding upon judges in every state, end quote. Fujii versus State, 1952, 242, P, 2nd, 617, 38, Cal, 2nd, 718. You can listen to all the other broadcasts or programs you want, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, I urge you to. Listen to everyone. Read everything, but believe nothing. You can read anything you want to, but you'd better come back every day at this same time and listen to the hour of the time, because that's the only way you're ever going to grow up. You get pablum from everyone else. You get lies, you get rumor, you get BS, you get disinformation. I have to spoon feed you because you can't get it any other way. And I document and source every single thing I ever tell you so that you can go look it up for yourself and know that I'm telling you the truth. But don't believe a word I tell you unless you do look it up. Don't even believe your mother. This is the age of deception. And remember, who is the great deceiver? If you don't know, look it up and find out. Page 583, paragraph 144 says, quote, police power enactments. Police power of state, especially when exerted for protection of life and limb, is as pervasive as any of reserved powers of states and should be respected unless there is a clear collision with national law, which has right of way under this clause, end quote. Kessler versus Department of Public Safety, Financial Responsibility Division, State of Utah. Utah, 1962-82, S. Court, 807-369, U.S. Supreme Court, 153-7, L. Ed. 2nd, 641. Quote, in the application of this principle of supremacy of an act of Congress, in a case where the state law is but the exercise of a reserved power, the repugnance or conflict should be direct and positive, so that the two acts could not be reconciled or consistently stand together, and also that the act of Congress should have been passed in the exercise of a clear power under the Constitution such as that in question. Sinnott versus Davenport, Alabama, 1859-63, United States Supreme Court, 227-22, Howe, spelled H-O-W-E, 227-16, L. Ed., 243. Quote, treaty conflicts generally. 154, paragraph 154 on page 589, quote, treaty conflicts generally. State law must yield when it is inconsistent with or impairs the policy of provisions of a treaty or of an international compact or agreement, end quote. Do you understand what I'm telling you? The New World Order is a done deal. They just haven't told you yet, and they can't tell you until they take your guns away, and then it will be too late. You see, the Charter of the United Nations is really the supreme law of the land. That's what this is all telling you. And treaties, NAFTA, and GATT. Do you know that GATT establishes a World Trade Organization that can dictate law to the United States of America? Did you know that? Well, it's true. U.S. versus Pink, New York, 1942-62, S. Court, 552-315, U.S. Supreme Court, 203-86, L. Ed. 796. See also, Henri Ostrowski's Estate, 1936-290, New York State, 174-160, MISC, period, 482, State versus Arthur, 1953, 261, P. 2nd, 135, 74, Idaho, 251. Quote, the treaty-making power has been surrendered by the states and given to the United States, and treaties are as binding within the territorial limits of the states as they are elsewhere throughout the domain of the United States. End quote. Baldwin versus Franks, Cal, 1887, 7, S. Court, 656. 763, 120, United States Supreme Court, 682, 30, L. Ed., 766. See also, Nielsen versus Johnson, Iowa, 1929, 49, S. Court, 223, 279, U.S. Supreme Court, 47, 73, L. Ed., 607. Murano versus Baltimore, etc., etc., etc. And there's two more paragraphs of citations, which I'm not going to read. You can look it up. Quote, it is the declared will of the people of the United States that every treaty made by the authority of the United States shall be superior to the Constitution and laws of any individual state, end quote. Ware versus Hylton, Virginia, 1796, 3, U.S. Supreme Court, 199, 3, Dahl, 199, 1, L. Ed., 568. See also, N. Re. Wyman, 1906, 77, N. E., 379, 191, Massachusetts, 276, 114, M's. M-A-M-S-T-R-E-P 601. Quote, state statutory provisions yields to any applicable provision of any valid treaty of the United States with foreign country, since treaties constitute part of supreme law of the land, end quote. De Tenorio versus McGowan, C.A., Mississippi, 1975, 510, F, 2nd, 92, rehearing denied, 513, F, 2nd, 294, certiorari denied, 96, S. Court, 150, 423, U.S. Supreme Court, 877, 46, L. Ed. 2nd, 110. Quote, a treaty must be regarded as a part of the law of an individual state as much as are the state's own statutes, and it may override the power of state, even in respect of the great body of private relations which usually fall within control of the state, end quote. Amaya versus Stanilind Oil and Gas Company, CCA, Texas, 1947, 158, F. 2nd, 554, certiorari denied, 67, S. Court, 1191, 331, United States Supreme Court, 808, 91, L. Ed., 1828, rehearing denied, 67, S. Court, 1530, 331, United States Supreme Court, 867, 91, L. Ed., 1871, quote, a treaty is supreme law of the land, and even state law must yield when it is inconsistent with or impairs policy or provisions of a treaty, end quote. The United Nations Charter, ladies and gentlemen, is a treaty. Do you understand what's happening? Now do you know why you feel that something is really wrong in your gut, but you don't know what it is? The world government already exists. They're just moving you into it slowly. Once they take your guns away, they're going to slam you into it. Throw you down on the ground and slap the chains around your ankles from which you will never escape. For a disarmed people is an enslaved people. Second article and amendment had nothing to do with the right to hunt. It was to protect us against tyranny. People who own firearms and belong to militias, ladies and gentlemen, are not extremists. They're not anti-government. They're not terrorists, domestic or otherwise. They are what they have always been, American patriots dedicated to the principles and ideals upon which this nation was founded, and they are ready and willing, as they have always been throughout the history of this nation, to give their life in defense of the freedom of the American people and of the preservation of the Constitutional Republic. Anyone who proposes to take the guns away from the American people, or to register guns, or to in any way control the people's right to keep and bear arms, are not only extremists, they are traitors. They are the terrorists. They are the extremists. They are the liars. And I have proven it to you, not with words, not with fluffy, good-feeling crap that you hear from them all the time, but with documentation and facts. With the law. With the truth. With the real history. When are you going to wake up? Have you been kissed by a rose? If so, you better pull your mouth away and slap that rose, because it is the kiss of death. To be kissed by the rose is the kiss of death. To buy into the lies and the manipulation and the deceptions of socialism is the kiss of death. Is the kiss of death what you want? Are you a communist, Marxist, socialist, or are you an American? You'd better make that decision pretty soon. If you're an American, welcome. I'll fight and die beside you anytime it's required to protect the freedom of all of us. If you decide you're a socialist, we will ultimately meet upon a battlefield, and I'm going to have to kill you. And that's the truth. And I will not hesitate, because I know you will kill me if I do. And that also is the truth. I will do everything in my power, as I have done for years, to prevent bloodshed from ever happening. And if we could awake enough Americans to realize a consensus of political power before we lose our right to keep and bear arms, we can do it. If we can't do it, there will be civil war in this country, because there are just too many Americans like me. We will not be slaves in the new world totalitarian socialist communist order. We will not. It's as simple as that. And I will never shut up. Someday they're going to have to come here and try to kill me to shut me up, because they won't do it any other way. And I will stand here and protect my rights with everything in my power, including the force of arms. There will be no negotiations. There will be no surrender on my part. You see, I'm a realist. No fantasy here. You see what I've been telling you, ladies and gentlemen, we don't exist as a country anymore, at least not the country that we thought we were, and in fact not a country at all. We are quickly becoming a part of a region of the New World Order, which will consist of Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And the standard of living will be leveled to the lowest common denominator of the three. You see, in all socialist systems, there cannot be a middle class. That's forbidden. For a middle class never consents to be ruled by socialists or communists. Anywhere that our Constitution or our laws conflict with the United Nations Charter or any of the treaties under the United Nations Treaty and the United Nations Participation Act, the United Nations will prevail. We are a vassal state of a world government and have been since 1945. Quote, state cannot attempt to exercise jurisdiction if to do so would violate an international treaty, end quote. Chicago Company Limited versus Superior Court for City and County of San Francisco, 1973, 109 Cal, REPTR, period, 402-33, CA, 3rd. 808, quote, a duly executed treaty is the supreme law of the land, and state and local laws must yield to its provisions. Republic of Finland versus Town of Pelham, 1966, 270, New York, F. 2nd, 661, 26, A.D., 2nd, 35, quote, states are bound by this clause to respect the terms of treaties entered into by Congress, end quote. State versus Miller, 1984, 689, P, 2nd, 81, 102, Washington, 2nd, 678, quote, state laws must yield to valid treaties where there is a conflict between them, and even laws governing essentially local matters must bow when treaty provisions override them, end quote. Wires v. Arnold, 1941, 147, S.W., 2nd, 644, 347, Missouri, 413, certiorari denied, 61, S. Court, 1112, 313, U.S. Supreme Court, 589, 85, L. Ed. 1544. Wake up, America. You've been had. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. God bless each and every single one of you. And may God find it in his bottomless bucket of mercy to save this republic.
Gonna change.
This socialist is talking about, ladies and gentlemen. How many times do you listen to the lyrics of the music and not even understand what they're telling you? How many of you listen to John Lennon's song Imagine and think that it's just wonderful? I encourage you to get it out wherever you have it stashed and listen to it again with your brain this time. I'm William Cooper, the most dangerous radio host in America, and that comes directly from the White House. And you're listening to The Hour of the Time. This is the Voice of Freedom. Freedom Radio Network, with studios in Eager, Arizona, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world.
The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 9955 kHz, Monday through Friday nights from 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.